I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to La Liga Lowdown and this Matchday 9 recap. I'm your host, Matt Clark, and I'm joined by Rory Barlow. How are you, Rory?
Yeah, I'm well. I was nice and rested and nourished after the international break, and now we've been eased in back to La Liga with 6 games before we get into a sort of a rip-roaring week ahead of us, even if I can speak again.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we had only 6 games once again. 2 postponed due to players coming back from the international break and not being able to play on the Sunday because of Champions League commitments. So Granada against Atletico and Real Madrid against Athletic Club was postponed. But the results that we had were Levante-Getafe, both of whom started with new coaches on the bench. That was a pretty hard watch, as we'll hear from Paco coming up. But that finished 0-0. And then the Real Sociedad left it very, very late, but they did pick up a 1-0 victory over Mallorca. And then on Sunday, Rayo Vallecano came from behind to keep up their strong home record and recorded a 2-1 win over Elche. Sevilla, they also weren't too impressive, but they got a 1-0 win away at Celta. And then Villarreal, their first defeat of the season, and it came against Osasuna, a 2-1 victory for the team from Pamplona. And in the Sunday night game, the fixture that never disappoints, always delivers goals. Barca 3, Valencia 1. And we're going to talk about that straight away. Rory, you saw this game, obviously from a Barca persuasion yourself. How do you assess this performance and this victory?
Yeah, on the whole, it was quite an entertaining start, and it sort of burst into life, and in sort of the opposite way of building towards a crescendo, it sort of gradually got less and less fast and sort of entertaining. From my point of view for Barcelona, this was a game I've seen many times before under Koeman, and it was better. There were reasons to be positive, chiefly among them Ansu Fati, who, although still showing signs of rust, I will say, just is so good in front of goal, and once he gets close to that box is lethal. Memphis was pretty good again today. I thought the return of Jordi Alba and Sergiño Dest really gave Barcelona some width, which is something they've been criminally lacking in recent games, but the issues and the problems that have really undermined them against better opposition and teams that have beaten them so far this season, such as the gaps in between the midfield, the sort of ease with it, which other teams can sort of run past their defence, essentially. I still think there's enough that we saw today to say that this wasn't a great improvement on the part of Barcelona as a team. It was an improvement in terms of players, and yeah, Koeman's, one of his arguments is that when they get players back, they will be better, but that's not enough, and I think they need to be better as a team to actually compete with teams. From Valencia's perspective, I think this is a pretty frustrating game for them, and Gaia said that their plan worked, sort of pushing up high and trying to take the ball off Barcelona at various points. He said it worked for about 18 minutes. And I find it hard to really disagree with them. I thought Valencia weren't at their best, their most assertive or clinical, and that really hindered them tonight. But overall, a frustrating night for Bordalas, a pleasing one for Koeman, who sort of, this will release the pressure a little bit more after the international break. And not much development for either side for me.
It feels like the international break came at a good time for Barca. They're able to kind of get that extra 2 weeks of recovery for certain players, Ansu, of course, chiefly among them. And today we saw Philippe Coutinho come and score again, and Aguero made his debut off the bench late on. So a couple of positives there for Barca fans. Just before the game, of course, there was that members meeting taking place where some phenomenally worrying figures were read out, but that's still to be resolved in the coming days and voted on. But on the pitch, at least, it is a victory for Barca, and they will have to now go and do the job in the Champions League, of which they're still waiting for their first shot on target. But in this game, of course, they did have the three goals, and you know, as you say, Memphis with a goal and an assist. Ansu took his goal very well, and some linking up starting to develop, especially from wide areas. So a few positives for Barca. How are you feeling ahead of this big week then, with the Clásico on the horizon?
Well, they should beat Dinamo Kiev. And to their credit in this game, they did go 1-0 down and managed to not fall apart, which they have done in other games. They have the players and they have to beat Dinamo Kiev. There's just no other way around it. They have the players to beat them. And Valencia, for me, probably a better opposition than Dinamo Kiev. I mean, I can't say that I'm an expert on them, but we shall see. Barcelona's propensity to get themselves into trouble in games against more modest sides is notable, so we'll see what happens. I really fear for them against Real Madrid. I don't see a way that they stop their attack, and unless they put away all of their chances, I think we could see a pretty similar game to what we saw last year in the Camp Nou Clásico when they lost 3-1 and they didn't do too badly, but they sort of just couldn't keep up with Real Madrid defensively or with the ball.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be an interesting week ahead for Barca. Well, now let's hear from another contributor. We're going to hear from Tom Harris, part of our La Liga Lowdown group, and he caught up with Rory to discuss Villarreal's defeat to Osasuna.
I'm joined here by Tom Harris of our own parish. It's great to have him in on for the first time. And he's been to El Madrigal, well, formerly El Madrigal, Estadio La Ceramica, several times this season. So we're delighted to have him on to talk about Villarreal this season. How are you getting on, Tom?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, excellent. And it's been a interesting start to the season for Villarreal. And I think both of us have just watched Villarreal lose 2-1 at home to Osasuna in a really tight game where they kind of dominated the play but didn't quite manage to get home. What were your general thoughts? I always like to sort of just get what stood out to you as opposed to necessarily me. So yeah, what were your thoughts of the game?
First and foremost, I think it's a real sickener for Villarreal, to be honest. Not just because, you know, the unbeaten runs come to an end. They obviously were the only unbeaten side in La Liga so far. But because the starting lineup today really did have quite a lot of promise. It's the first time, obviously, Gerard Moreno, we'll talk about him a bit later, but he started alongside Danjuma and Jeremy Pino. And, you know, I was expecting a little bit more from them today. Obviously, Gerard scored that incredible goal that we'll mention. But, yeah, just slightly disappointing and, you know, kind of reminiscent of last season as well. Because, I mean, obviously, in this game, at La Ceramica last season, Osasuna also won 2-1, and it was in very similar circumstances where Villarreal dominated the game. And last season it was a moment of magic from Moncayola, and this season it was a mistake from Aissa Mandi. And so it just, slightly reminiscent of last season, which is slightly worrying for Unai Emery, I think, because there were a lot of points dropped last season, which meant that they didn't ultimately end up qualifying for, well, finishing in a position to qualify for Europa League. So we just need to, just try and make sure that these kind of things don't happen again, because, you know, it was looking good up until today. And, I think he will be slightly disappointed with how things have gone.
Yeah, and you mentioned Gerard Moreno, who scored an absolutely fantastic volley. Really, goal out of nothing, sort of the kind of thing that people pay a lot of money for. He's back from injury. How much of the sort of offensive deficits do you expect him to make up for Villarreal?
Yeah, I mean, he was the one bright spot today, I thought. He's not, obviously this season he's not been as blistering as he was last year. I mean, he's got 23 goals and 7 assists, I think, last season. But it's his first goal this season. I mean, it was incredible technique. He kind of has this very unorthodox technique, does Gerard Moreno. And today, I think, was a good demonstration of that. He kind of had to contort his entire body to kind of volley that ball. But it just ends up in the top corner. It was a real, real moment of magic. And obviously, it didn't lived up to expectations today, but I think this link-up with Danjuma could be very exciting. I think Jeremy Pino is coming into his own this season, and I think that could be exciting. And also Chukwueze as well, off the bench today. So yeah, I mean, I think as well, with all these new names, I think it does take slightly, you know, the weight of expectation off Moreno. I think there were a lot of times last season where he looked like he was really the only player who was going to do anything offensively for Villarreal. This season, obviously, it didn't happen today, but Danjuma has shown that he can step up. Pino has also shown that he can step up, so I do think it takes a bit of weight off Moreno's shoulders. But yeah, I am looking forward to seeing him link up with some of these players that we've discussed, and hopefully, you know, today it didn't quite work out, but I think there is reason to be excited from a Villarreal perspective.
Yeah, you talk about reasons to be excited, and Jeremy Pino, probably maybe even the most exciting player in La Liga, sort of breakout player this season. Villarreal have kind of been known as the draw kings of La Liga so far this season. Just before they break, they managed to get a victory against Betis, a sort of direct contender for European places. And you sort of thought that maybe this was the upturn and this was sort of the building block. They follow that up with this defeat at home to Osasuna with Gerard Moreno back. They've also kind of snatched defeat from the draws of from the jaws of a draw against Manchester United. Why is it that Villarreal, in your view, sort of seem to come up short in these really tight games where they perhaps could have got more?
I mean, I do think a large part of it is just concentration. I mean, we've seen that twice this season. Unfortunately, both of these times it's come from Issa Mandy. But, you know, the game at the Metropolitano where he headed it into his own net in the 96th minute. Today, it was a really poor back pass that just went straight through to Chimi Avila. And again, yeah, you look at, like I was saying before, it is kind of reminiscent to last season, because you looked at games last season against Elche, for example. They were 2-0 up at half time, looked like they were cruising, and then ended up drawing that game 2-2. And it does just seem to be a bit of a complacency thing and maybe a bit of a concentration thing. But it is really hard to pin down, because, you know, I mean, you look at today, they had 6 shots on target as opposed to Osasuna's 2 and ended up losing the game 2-1. It's just, is there a lack of clinicalness there? It's really quite hard to pin down, because they have been playing some really good football, but they just don't seem to be getting the results that, you know, match the football that we've been playing. So,
yeah, certainly they do seem to have a slightly different kind of, not mentality to Europe, but in Europe they seem more clinical, they seem to take advantage of when they play well, whereas in La Liga perhaps not so much. But I shall throw it back to Matt on the pod. Thank you very much for coming on, Tom. If you did, and you definitely did enjoy the content there from Tom, go follow him at @TomHarris_ on Twitter, Tom with an H. But yeah, thanks very much.
Thank you.
All the best. Back to Matt.
Thanks, Rory and Tom. We're going to take a short break now, but don't go anywhere. Coming up, we've got the best of the action and the rest of the match day, as well as Paco sharing his thoughts on Levante's new start. And of course, we have time for MVP and our moments of the weekend. Don't go away.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We'll be right back.
Buen balón profundo para Lobete. Amarra Lobete, chuta Lobete. Gol, 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 gol. Desde Leza con amor. Gol.
Welcome back to La Liga Lowdown. We've got plenty more still to discuss. I'm here again with Rory Barlow. And let's start with the new league leaders, Real Sociedad. Without Mikel Oyarzabal, down to 10 men for the entire second half, but they found a way to win. And they are top of the table and will be until the Clásico because of those postponements for Atletico and Real Madrid. Rory, how impressive is this Real Sociedad side?
Yeah, really impressive. And this was, for me, a victory of fear, a victory of kind of faith and belief in themselves. Because Mallorca, to give them credit, and a lot of people tend to be a bit dismissive of them on the road, and that's kind of fair enough if you look at their results, but they were pretty good, and they really challenged La Real, and especially when Ian Munoz got sent off. But Aguathil already has the adversity of injuries to deal with. He's missing Mikel Oyarzabal, who's been getting them over the line. And so just to get the 3 points, and you saw the sort of eruption of the limbs in the crowd after that sort of Lobete goal was fantastic. And I think that eruption kind of mirrored the kind of how big this was for La Real and celebrating the Copa del Rey as well. It was fantastic to see, I have to say, Matt. And you wrote a great piece on it as well. Go to Matt's Twitter, go find that. And what did you think of it?
Thank you for the plug, yes. I agree. I mean, Imanol himself said it was a triumph of faith. And you're exactly right. They've been struggling all season with injuries, and you kind of think, okay, they can maybe cope for two or three games without certain players. Isaac missed a couple of games, but Oyarzabal, of course, was there to step up. David Silva, he's missed most of the games, but of course, they've got very good midfielders, Zubimendi, Mikel Merino. But you did wonder, without Oyarzabal, it would be tough to kind of break down a very solid Mallorca side, especially when it was 11 against 10. And Mallorca will feel they probably should have won this game in truth, but, you know, again, it's almost hard to describe. It's almost intangible, but there is something there in San Sebastian, and La Sociedad are really strong at home with the fans back. And again, it's another Zubieta product, Julien Lobete, with the winning goal, and he took it really well. I know it was a goalkeeping mistake from Manolo Reyna, but it was still a really well taken goal, a kind of incisive pass through to him, and then he kind of beats a man and then kind of side foots it into the corner. So it was a really composed finish in the circumstances, and as you say, yeah, the eruption of emotion at full time was fantastic to see, really. And I think they deserve to be leaders at the moment because they've been playing really well, like you say, despite these injury problems and Europa League games, which have come thick and fast and will continue to do so. So it'll be interesting to see how that kind of evolves as we get into the autumn winter. But next weekend, Atletico, it's going to be a huge game. We've got the Clásico as well, but Atletico against Real Sociedad is going to be just as good, I think. So, Real Sociedad top of La Liga after match day 9. Speaking of teams doing really well, how about Osasuna? Another late goal, another win on the road. That's 4 out of 4. And of course, the story which everyone, I'm sure I'm right, it's fair enough to say this, everyone is delighted to see Chimi Avila back on the score sheet in La Liga 651 days later. Rory, just sum up that goal and Osasuna in general. How good were they?
Yeah, Chimi, you saw him. I don't know if there was moisture on his face after the goal, but certainly he was rubbing his eyes after it, and it was kind of a disbelief. It's certainly a release for him. And you, after the match, Yago Barrasate came in and gave him a big meaty Basque hug after it, and it was very heartwarming to see, I have to say. And Osasuna, I think for many people, represent a team that people like to see doing well. They're fairly inoffensive in many ways and lovable in others. In terms of the game, and I sort of discussed Villarreal's shortcomings with Tom, but on the other hand, Osasuna, I think, really handled Villarreal well in the first half and put difficulty or gave Villarreal difficulties that they couldn't really get around. Away from home, they do seem to have a great formula of just getting that balance right between sitting back, countering, and causing enough issues for the opposition. Lucas Toro came up with the goal today, but they have certainly a system and a manager who are comfortable. They know exactly what they're doing. Their lineup today looked really defensive, but they also did cause issues for Villarreal. And all credit to Hugo Barrasate. I think they are the example of a really well-run football club right now.
Absolutely. I fully agree. And, you know, on paper, some of their away fixtures might have looked easy on paper, you think. You know, Cadiz away, okay, you can win that one. Even Mallorca, it's a tough place to go, but, you know, you could win there. But then to win away at Villarreal, who haven't lost in La Liga this season, they haven't even been behind in a game until today, to then come under that pressure in the second half and then somehow find a winner. Yes, it was a bit of a gift from Mandy, but they held on at the end and defended for their lives. And as you say, so much to like about Osasuna. And it's just a great story, really. And there they are up in the top echelons of La Liga. So another great feel-good factor story for this weekend. And to continue with that theme, we now head over to Vallecas and Rayo Vallecano. Yet another home win for them. Falcao wasn't even needed today, and they still come up with the 3 points. How impressed were you with their performance?
Yeah, you kind of saw Falcao warming up towards the end, just before Randy Inteca came on. And it was sort of the predictable story that Falcao would come on and get the winner. But as you said, it didn't need him. Randy Inteca came on and almost immediately swiped home a really, really nice goal, it has to be said. And Rayo Vallecano, I think they're playing, I think I tweeted about it, how they're playing with like exactly the right amount of confidence and bite. There's aggression to their play, but there's also plenty of style. And most often when teams are sort of sat back, there seems to be a tendency or temptation to really consider what a team is doing. If Elche, for instance, were sat back in their half, Rayo wouldn't slow the tempo down at all, and sort of the attacks wouldn't be so meditated. Everything would be 1, 2, 3 touches. There was nothing sort of slow about their play, and they really caused Rayo, as they did with Cadiz before that, it really caused Elche, as they did with Cadiz, problems in that way. And I think it's perhaps, it has to go credit to Rayo and Iraola for doing this, but it's perhaps a fault of many managers that they think if the team is sat in front of them, then they can't play as quickly as perhaps they might want to if they did on the break. I think most teams, when they're counter-attacking, they play 1-2 touches and they really go for it. Whereas Rayo do that the entire game, and that's complete credit to them. Oscar Plejo, he's just, every game he leaves a few nice touches for you to really enjoy. And yeah, I thought they were fantastic again, I have to say.
Yeah, I think a lot of that comes from Iraola, as you touched on there. And especially down the left-hand side today, the two Garcias, Fran and Alvaro, they were just sensational. They just caused so many problems. And you just felt that the goal was coming. It was wave after wave of attack. And, you know, as soon as Inteca comes on, he comes up with that brilliant individual goal. And then Rayo held on. And I thought Elche were decent, certainly first half in this game. They counted themselves pretty well. And in the end, they've come away with a 2-1 defeat, and it could have been more, in truth. I think Rayo could have put the game to bed earlier, but, the fans were jubilant. Again, more capacity allowed at Vallecas. The noise was incredible at full time. It was like a cup final atmosphere, and Rayo are going so strong. And, we all tipped them to be very, you know, struggling. I think most of us tipped them to be, you know, rock bottom. But they're proving us all wrong, and they're enjoying themselves along the way. So long may that continue for the fans there at Vallecas. Speaking of teams which, maybe conforming to expectations rather than going against them, Sevilla, they went to Balaidos and ground out a 1-0 win. Wasn't that pretty? Wasn't too much in the way of good football from Sevilla, at least. Celta played pretty well, but again, couldn't find the way to the goal. And Sevilla just quietly grinding out these 1-0 wins. And, they're up at the top of the table as well. So they are very much in the title race. It's certainly not an entertaining Sevilla like we might have expected in the past. But I don't know, they're getting the job done, aren't they, Rory?
They are. And I saw a lot of people praising them for exactly that. The fact that they do manage to grind out these results. And they do have a sturdiness to them. And Lopetegui, I do think if they continue in this way and doing the things that Lopetegui asked them to, they will probably get to Champions League, which has to be their ultimate goal this season. That is the sort of bar they want to hit. But on the other hand, if you do want to be ambitious and go for the title and they weren't far off it. I think they were, one or two players off last season, which perhaps they have now. Then you cannot keep playing this way for me. Juan Jordan started in midfield with Ivan Rakitic and Fernando, and it sort of alternated with Nemanja Gudel as well, who was in the centre of defence. I was watching, I took sort of 10 minutes to watch Rakitic, because I was a huge fan of Rakitic at Barcelona. I know he was the butt of many jokes, but I watched him, and yes, okay, positionally he was very good. He was in the right place often, but so rarely did he break the lines with a pass, so rarely did he do anything to really improve the moves for Sevilla. And that's okay if you have one of those players, but if you have two of them and Juan Jordan's a little bit more sort of aggressive and forward thinking, that's, it's a problem for me. And especially against Celta today, they were lucky. Their goal came from a deflected shot, which did come after an improvement through Suso coming on for Rakitic, and they were really lucky not to concede. Celta on a different day scored 3-4 goals today. I can't praise Lopetegui for this win, when although they did grind out many of these results last season, they also suffered against Granada earlier, like sort of before the international break, and it was games against like this, against the likes of even Valladolid last season at home, they conceded in the last minute, that really prevented them from being right in the title race. And so I think you have to ask for a little more from Lopetegui, to be honest.
I do agree. Devil's advocate, just to say, I think without both centre-backs, Koundé and Diego Carlos, having to play Gudel in the back four to then still keep a clean sheet away from home at a ground that they haven't always done too well at, is to be admired. And some would say as well that Atletico Madrid have been playing this way for many years, and it's kind of the foundation of their success. So it's very interesting, and we'll see how it develops over the next few weeks. Obviously, they've got some work to do in the Champions League. That will definitely also be an objective, to make sure they qualify for the knockout stages of that once again. But I do agree in general. We do want to see more from Sevilla. They have the players, they have the coach, they have the potential to really entertain and score some more goals at the end of the day, because we know they're solid enough defensively. I think they can just be, throw a little bit more caution to the wind at times. So in general, I do agree. But Sevilla, they've got the win under their belt, so they'll be pretty content after that result. As for Celta, that's now 38 games under Chacho Coudet, the equivalent of a full season, of course. And they have 15 wins, 8 draws and 15 defeats. So very equal there. And I think the feeling today was that it was a little unlucky to lose this game. But if they want to kind of reach those aspirations of top half European contention, they're going to have to start picking up some wins soon. La Liga returned after the international break with a pretty unique game, with not one but two new coaches taking charge of their clubs for the first time. And this was, of course, at the Ciutat de Valencia, and Paco is here with me to talk all about that game. How are you, Paco?
Hi, Mr. Clark. Very well.
Good.
Even though the game we're going to talk about wasn't exactly the most exciting one.
No, it certainly wasn't, was it? So from the Levante perspective, Javier Pereira, he kind of came in from nowhere, really. There was some rumours that it could be Diego Martinez to replace Paco Lopez, but that was quickly kind of shot down. So for those who don't really know, who is Javier Pereira?
Well, he was the assistant coach for Juan Ignacio Martinez 10 years ago, when the current Zaragoza manager came over to Levante and was the heir to the incredible job done by Luis García Plaza, who was the one who saved Levante from oblivion in second division. He was able to get the promotion towards Primera, and later kept the team in first division. So Juan Ignacio Martinez was already inheriting a very good side, but Jim, as we use the acronym over here, just drove Levante to new heights, and the team rose to new heights because they were able to actually, in the next few days, we're going to celebrate the 10th anniversary of Levante being top of the league, which is something that you don't see every day, okay? Mm. And that went under Jim's management. So Javi Pereira was his main assistant, okay? He has been very close to him for quite a few years in his career, but around 6-7 years ago, he decided to fly solo, and he has done so in a number of different teams. For example, he was in Watford, working in the both in the sports direction and the staff of the first team. He also has spent quite a while in exotic leagues, we could say, and his last experience has been in China. He has been for a few years being the head manager for the Henan Shenzhen Longmen. A bit difficult to pronounce because I'm Spanish and Chinese is not my, you know, mother tongue. But anyway, he did a pretty good job over there. Last year, he managed to make the team fifth in the standings. And obviously, Levante thought about him because it's like a well-known individual in the sports direction.
Yeah.
I actually was quite, I don't know, my criticism went towards the sports direction because I believe that this coach is the one which the sports direction needed, but I don't believe it was actually the best for what Levante actually needed, okay? Mm. Because it was an easy signing. Manolo Salvador knows him very well. David Navarro knows him very well because he played under his command in Levante when he was member of the staff. Also, there's a great relationship with the board, the president. I don't know. I believe that it was a safe or a safe choice or a choice that didn't actually demand Levante to really seek hard in the market and try to find someone who was really going to up the ante and on the bench in the sidelines. So that's the signing, that's the whole process that went behind it. But at the end of the day, what Levante fans want is winning games.
Yep.
And in the first experience and the first chance of doing so, I believe that they weren't very impressed about what they saw, because it's true that Pereira only had 3 days to prepare the game. He was signed over 1 week before, 1 week earlier, but he took 10 days to get the plane and finally get to Valencia because of all of the COVID-19 restrictions. I don't know. It was a weird thing to happen. But anyway, the game itself was not the best example, not the best showcase. Even so, Levante were able to keep a clean sheet, and that's news, actually. Also, in Getafe's case, because they had been allowing plenty of goals this season, but again, Getafe had also got a new manager in the form of Quique Sánchez Flores. So overall, we're going to delve deep in the game in a few seconds, but I believe that both sides were too afraid of allowing goals and conceding chances, and that's why the match was pretty boring, ultimately.
Yes, you tweeted awful game in response to
it was awful. It was I had to like watch it through and through 100% of the game because I had to broadcast it. Okay, I didn't have the chance of, you know, going away to the toilet or to have a quick snack. No, I had to endure 90 minutes of this, and it wasn't pretty. Okay, it was incredibly frustrating to see two sides with players such as José Luis Morales or Roberto Soldado, which was, in my view, the MVP for the game. Arambarri in Getafe, you know, talented players.
Yeah.
Just more worried and more concerned about not losing the point, okay, than going full-fledged forward towards trying to pick up the 3 points. And that was the main issue for both teams.
Yeah, it seemed to be playing with the shackles on, as you say, scared of losing. In terms of the approach then, did you notice any signs in how Javier Pereira is going to be different from Paco López, kind of formation, personnel? What could you pick out?
Well, you could see it in the first half an hour. There's a saying or a word that we use over here in Valencia, which is barraca. That's a very typical construction over here in the Valencian countryside. And it's usually also used to define those teams who are who park the bus at the back, okay? Like, if you are barraquero, you are actually parking the bus 90% of the time. And that's the feeling that I got from that first game for Javi Pereira. He chose the barraquero approach, okay? And the main issue was trying to have as many men as possible behind the ball in most phases of the game. And that's why we had so small number of chances, even if we added both sides. I think that the times of enjoying Levante as a neutral fan are over. Levante are not going to be no more that fun side to watch, the unpredictable side, the attacking side, the scoring side. That is over, okay? Under Javi Pereira, Levante are going to become much more predictable, which is at the same time much more boring, and not be as exuberant when they have the ball. Actually, they lost ball possession in many phases of the game, whereas for under Paco López, most of the time, they won ball possession, especially at home, because they had the initiative, and they were always the ones going forward, whereas the visiting side, the away side, were the ones defending themselves. So in this case, I believe that under Javi Pereira, both center backs are going to be much more happier, much more supported by the rest of the squad. And actually, we saw that with Bezo and Mustafi, who did a good game. Not a great game, but a pretty good game. And they were assisted and supported by the rest of the squad, because I believe that solidarity and trying to run more, press more, defend more was their main order, and they obviously obeyed. But we are losing an incredible team to watch for any La Liga fan. So on one hand, possibly Levante will pick up more points, especially draws like this weekend against Getafe. On the other hand, we have lost an amazing team, an amazing sight to enjoy, and that is bad news overall to La Liga.
Yeah, it's a shame to hear that for sure. Looking ahead to the next fixtures, it's a tough couple of weeks ahead. They go to Sevilla next weekend, and then the champions come to town, Atletico Madrid. And they're on this winless run, which extends back into last season. Where do you see the first win coming from?
Well, nowadays I believe that Sevilla are in better form than Real. I believe that they are in better form than Barca, but I would say that Atleti are just unstoppable. So if we add Sevilla and Atleti in the next couple of games, and we add the fact that this Levante is going to be much more defensive than the former one, it's going to be tough. Because under Paco López, by the way, Levante were able to be the underdog and win this kind of games.
Yeah.
Before
took 4 points,
they beat. Yeah, they were able to beat Atleti last season. They were able to beat Real Madrid a couple of seasons ago. Also Barca once again, and they have done so in glorious fashion. Mm-hmm. You know, like breaking any kind of prediction, beating all odds, and not only winning the game and scraping the win, but doing so with flair and with style and without giving up their main traits of identity. In this case, if we add the fact that Javi Pereira has had too little time to work with his guys, and that he's going to shift, obviously, all of the focus into the defense, and that the changes that are affecting the squad go deeper than only the formation, because I believe Javi Pereira is going to try to get more involved other players who didn't play under Paco López, okay? And the injuries, let's see what happens with Roger Martí. He lost he missed the game this weekend because of some problems in his heel. I'm not very confident on the chances of Levante picking up points against two juggernauts as Atleti and Sevilla. So I believe they'll have to wait to the next few games in order to at least get their first win. I believe it will come in Ciudad de Valencia, because it's much easier to get that at home, even though, and I have to add this mod to my argument, the fans are beginning to grow unhappy. They are not very, very, involved and engaged in what the club is doing at this point. And I believe that is also one of the reasons for Ciudad de Valencia no longer being that magical place where incredible stuff happened, like the 5-4 against Barca 3 seasons ago, or beating Real Madrid 1-0 with that Morales goal. The magic has been lost, and I believe both Levante and their fanbase should work very, very hard to try to get it back.
Absolutely. We all want to see Levante firing again in La Liga. But it could be a tough few weeks ahead for them under Javier Herrera. Well, thank you very much, Paco, for joining us, and we'll catch up with you again soon.
Yeah, hopefully the next game is going to be a bit more interesting.
Definitely. Thanks, Paco.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks for that, Paco. We'll catch up with you again in the coming weeks. So now it's time for one of our favourite segments of the week, MVP. The cupboard was quite bare in truth this weekend, Rory, but you've got one standout candidate from Rio.
Yes, Alvaro Garcia, I was mightily impressed with. He was just sort of a river of creativity down the left. I don't know if that's a very good metaphor, but it's the one I've gone with. Yeah, everything sort of flowed down that left-hand side. Him and Fran Garcia were excellent together as a sort of tandem. I thought that, Elche just really had very little to sort of counteract that. And the whole game, it kind of came down that side. There was certain touches where the ball was sort of like being flighted across and he would take it down first time, kill it dead, and then sort of go at his defender. And it was kind of like watching a really elite footballer. It was like watching Neymar or something. And all of these footballers are very good, obviously, but he really demonstrated that today. And he really embodied that kind of audacity and the daringness to go at Elche, which is why I think Rayo were better than them. They were more confident and, had that ability to really put them on the ropes, so to speak.
Yeah, we had a discussion off mic, and we had quite a few candidates from Rio, to be fair. I mean, any number of three or four could have been on this nomination. And in fact, we have gone for two because I've insisted that we include Santi Comesaña. Once again, he was just a really calming, composed presence in midfield. He helped to make them tick, and he got an assist as well. So all very good numbers. And of course, we could have had, as you mentioned, Fran Garcia. We could have had Oscar Trejo as well. Rayo have got just so many really impressive players, and they're all performing at a top level. But yeah, for this week, we'll go with Alvaro Garcia and Santi Comesaña. We've also got a couple of goalkeepers on the nomination this week. Not too many goals around this week, and that is in part due to the performance of a couple of shot stoppers. Rory, which one have you gone for?
I've gone for Sergio Herrera of Osasuna for his good performance against Villarreal. And let's give some love to the sort of crazy men of football, the men in the sticks. And Sergio Herrera, although he was good, I think this is partly him picking up the award for the whole of the Osasuna defence, who really did a very good job against Villarreal away from home. The Garcias, all three of them, Ruben, Unai and David, were all very good. And I thought that they were just so well drilled, and the one goal that they did concede was a moment of brilliance from Gerard Moreno. There's just no, I mean, okay, that wasn't right in the corner, but there's no stopping that kind of surprise element of a volley like that. So Sergio Herrera picks it up for me as the sort of leader and perhaps the best of the Osasuna defence this week for me.
Yeah, I think he's a very underrated goalkeeper, to be honest. He has been pretty high level for a couple of seasons now. I'm going to go for Bono. Once again, we've spoken about how Sevilla were fairly lucky to get the 3 points. Rafa Mir continued his good goal-scoring form, but as we said, it was a little bit of a fortuitous goal. But for me, Bono was the man that kind of ensured Sevilla kept the 3 points. The expected goals conceded was over one, so the fact that they came away with a clean sheet is testament to him. Made a good few saves in the game as well, keeping Celta out. So I think Bono was key there for Sevilla to find the 3 points they were looking for. Now let's turn to moments of the weekend. And mine came quite early, to be honest. And we weren't sure it was going to come at all, as we've mentioned. It was that late, late winner from Julen Lobete for Real Sociedad. Just as we've mentioned, that emotional outpouring at that goal. And it just felt like such a important 3 points. It would have felt a little bit perhaps fair if it was a 0-0 draw, but at the same time it just felt like a really important decisive moment from Real Sociedad. And the fact that it came from another academy product is just an endorsement of what they're doing at that club. So for me, it's Julen Lobete. But who is it for you, Rory?
Yeah, and a sort of very visually pleasing sort of sight from from Julen Lobete there. For me, Chimi Avila, we mentioned it before, he has to be the moment of the week. His first goal in so long, and sort of the opposite effect in the sense that he kind of vacuumed the noise out of La Ceramica earlier. It was just, it was so nice to see. For, I think we maybe underestimate the human side of football sometimes, and you get invested in these stories. And Chimi Avila, one of the more sort of bombastic and enjoyable footballers to watch, has been through such a hard time with two really bad injuries, and it wasn't sort of the typical Chimi Avila volley or thumping strike from distance. It was cool, it was composed, it was through the legs, and just kind of rolled that into the empty net against Villarreal. And yeah, what a moment for him, what a moment for Osasuna, who are flying.
Absolutely. And just one tiny final thing to add, this isn't from La Liga, but it's worth saying a round of applause for Sergio Reguilón in the Tottenham game against Newcastle United this weekend. He acted quickly and decisively to ensure that the game was stopped and attention was given to a fan who had needed medical emergency treatment in the stands. So well played, Sergio Reguilón. Very important and worthwhile deed there. So that's the end of this podcast. Thank you very much, Rory, for joining us. Thanks also to Paco and to Tom for their contributions too. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast. Please follow us on Twitter at La Liga Lowdown. Check out our website. We have fresh content every week coming out. And that's all for now. But we'll leave you with that moment of the week from Rory. The return of Chimi Avila. Over 650 days, two cruciate ligament injuries later, he finally scores again in La Liga. Pero se la entrega, se la regala Lucas Mami. Ojo el Chimi, ojo el Chimi. Gol de Osasuna. Vaya regalo de Reyes que le ha hecho Mami al Chimi.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.